for all we can learn. After 10,000 years, it's still us against them, and my heroes have always died at the end. So who's going to account for these sins?
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Brussels is Paul Quinn Judge, who is the director of the Asia Program for the International Crisis Group, who have just issued a report on Afghanistan, the long, hard road to the 2014 transition. Previously, he was a foreign correspondent for Time magazine, and he has been visiting and covering Afghanistan since 1989. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Quinn Judge.
Thank you very much.
So this is quite a scathing report. Of course, the government in Afghanistan of Hamid Karzai have rejected it as nonsense. But essentially what you're saying here is that this is a government plagued by factionalism and corruption, and Afghanistan is far from ready to assume responsibility for security when U.S. and NATO forces withdraw in 2014. I've talked to a lot of specialists on Afghanistan, and certainly this doesn't come as a surprise to them. But the UN head is critical of your report, and predictably so is Karzai. Is there a lot of denial out there, do you think?
Yeah, I would have been very surprised and rather disturbed if President Karzai had welcomed the report. And I'd be surprised if NATO or the UN said that it made sense. However, I think there is quite a bit of denial, and I think in many ways our report is much more mainstream than some of the reactions from UN, from Kabul and elsewhere would lead one to believe today.
So the election that you in 2014, you're suggesting that under current conditions, the 2014 elections will be plagued by massive fraud, vote rigging in the south and east, where security continues to deteriorate, is all but guaranteed. That certainly is deja vu all over again. I remember talking with Ambassador Galbraith at the time of the last election, or after the last election, where he uncovered massive fraud and tried to get the United Nations to cancel the elections. But Kaiide backed Karzai, and Ambassador Galbraith was essentially hung out to dry. The record is so clear. What's the explanation for why we accepted the last elections and assume, for some reason or other, that the next ones won't be any different?
Well, I don't think there is a particularly logical explanation. A logical approach from Washington and elsewhere would be to put as much pressure as possible, in the politest possible way, but very intense way, on President Karzai to ensure that there are fair elections in 2014. I think the message that needs to go to Kabul right now is that the stakes are getting higher with each passing year. In 2014, you don't just have the military withdrawal, but you have a test of the political legitimacy of the Karzai regime. Political legitimacy is as important as firepower, and if President Karzai and his supporters fail that test in 2014, it could be absolutely disastrous for the country.
Again, I'm speaking with Paul Quinn Judge, who is the director of the Asia Program for the International Crisis Group, who have just issued a report on Afghanistan, the long, hard road to the 2014 transition. Now, I've spoken to a number of specialists, as I mentioned, on Afghanistan, including Chris Fair, who speaks the local languages. She's at Georgetown now, formerly was a UN political officer during that first election, as it happens. One of the stories that she keeps reminding us about is that in many ways, the Karzai regime is a narco-kleptocracy, and that the tons of money that the U.S. has poured in to Afghanistan in terms of nation building, an enormous amount of it have gone into these garish poppy palaces that are being built in and around in the suburbs of Kabul. as well as the enormous amount of money from the U.S. taxpayers that's ended up in Dubai, where, again, the cronies and families of the Afghan elite are hedging their bets and building mansions. So,
yeah, well, a lot of money has been diverted, has stolen, misappropriated over the years, and it's exceedingly unfortunate that the countries that have provided that money, as well as providing a lot of military support, have not taken more clear steps to make sure that the money is either recovered or accounted for. The fundamental thing, though, is it is bad news for the Western taxpayer who's been putting money into this. But the key thing is that to survive in the future in Afghanistan, any political regime will need the legitimacy and confidence of its people. If the government goes again in 2014 and oversees elections which people perceive to be corrupt or chaotic or fixed, this could be a very serious blow for political confidence in the Kabul regime. They need this very badly. They've got to change their ways. If they don't, life could become very unpleasant for them as well as for the Afghan people.
So when we hear reports of an almost inevitable civil war and a collapse, at least I know that your report doesn't go that far, but it does warn of alarming consequences, and unless steps to ensure a stable transition begin now to prevent a precipitous slide towards state collapse, time is running out. That's a refrain that I've been hearing for some time. Every time anybody, and particularly the United States government, criticizes Karzai, he turns around and says the U.S. is not doing enough. We have just lost our 2,000th soldier due to friendly fire, I might add. NATO has lost over 1,000 dead as well. I don't know what the total bill is. You probably have a better idea than I do. But, it's pretty galling for this guy to say that we're not making sufficient sacrifices for his country.
Yeah, well, President Karzai does seem to be rather low on rhetoric these days. He is more inclined to blame everybody else other than himself. What we are suggesting is that he can completely give up on the blame game and work on first recovering his own political prestige, secondly ensuring his own place in Afghan political history by, for the first time since 2001, overseeing elections in his country which are patently and provably honest and fair, and which bring to power a political leadership which may just have enough confidence of the Afghan people to turn the situation around. And without that, Western money, Western guns, Western troops are going to be absolutely useless. It really does depend on the Afghan leadership at the moment.
And again, I'm speaking with Paul Quinn Judge, who's in Brussels, where he's the director of the Asia Program for the International Crisis Group, who have just issued a report on Afghanistan, the long, hard road to the 2014 transition. So what is the role then, Paul Quinn Judge, of Pakistan in this? Clearly, they have had an investment, if you will, for the longest time in influencing, if not controlling, Pakistan. And they, along with Saudi Arabia, were the only supporters of the previous Taliban regime. And I think the assumption is that they will support a successive Taliban regime if that is to come to pass. It's worth noting that this peace march by the cricketer Imran Khan into the lawless region there was halted for security reasons, that even those sympathetic to the victims of drone strikes are not even able to get into that area because it's so dangerous. Yet Pakistan seems to be playing a kind of game here where they essentially protect the Haqqani network harbor the Taliban, and presumably will work with them if they take over. Is that their long view? Because I would think that a radical regime in Afghanistan run by the Taliban would, in fact, empower and influence the Taliban in Pakistan itself, the Pakistan Taliban. So you'd think that there's...
I think in many ways you've answered the question. Pakistan feels that it has a long-term interest and a long-term concern in who runs Afghanistan. President Karzai and other Afghan political figures have been very critical for many years of Pakistan's role in supporting the Taliban. I think, however, the weaker that the regime itself, the political system in Afghanistan becomes, the more likely that Pakistan is going to try to make sure that it has serious influence with the opponents of that regime, with the Taliban, that is. I don't see any way at the moment they're going to back off that. And once again, everything depends on the behavior and the comportment of the leaders of the Kabul government and their ability to move away from blaming everybody else and moving away from naming their enemies, however much sense it might make, and start really building bridges with their own people. And this is the fundamental challenge they're facing at the moment.
Well, the linchpin to all of this appears to be the police and the Afghan army. And one of the things that I one of the aspects of this is these green on blue killings of where Afghan soldiers are killing their NATO and U.S. trainers. And this obviously has a devastating effect on morale, and not to mention, I think, the U.S. taxpayers wondering what's happening in terms of nation building there. Is there, in your report, what kind of grades do you give this army? It's called a national army, but my understanding is it's largely made up of the former members of the so-called Northern Alliance who fought and almost were defeated in the civil war by the Taliban. So is this a Northern Alliance type of army, or is it a true national army?
Well, a big concern is that the Afghan army is very large, and there are a lot of Western officials who point that out at every possible opportunity. They are not held to be capable of independent military activity to any large level that is held by their trainers, their Western trainers. There's a feeling that the army would take quite some time to get to that point. The question is whether they will have enough time to do so. The Taliban are showing themselves to be not only very determined and ruthless, but also particularly clever in a cynical way, clever political strategists, as we've seen from the attacks on NATO and U.S. trainers. But yet again, it's though the military issue is exceedingly important, no military is going to win the war on its own. It needs popular support and popular confidence. And until the leaders of the country have that, however good that military might be in the long term, they will be without the fundamental backup of a population which views them in a positive light as a defender of the country. So this is another challenge for the regime, and another one that the regime really has to face up to very, very quickly.
And does the report address the kind of surrogate nature of this this war, in the sense that we've already mentioned Pakistan's role in supporting the Taliban and the Haqqani network? And one of the reasons I understand that Pakistan is hedging and wants the Taliban to take over in Afghanistan is that they're paranoid about the influence of India with the Karzai government and with the former Northern Alliance. Is there any indication that a post-2014 collapse could end up as a surrogate war between India and Pakistan?
I think that would be a stretch. It's certainly not something we've looked at in this report. The report is quite long. It's about 17,000 words, but we don't go into everything. And in fact, we have tried to focus very much on 2014 and the chances for reversing the present rather disturbing slide politically and militarily of the Afghan government.
So is it possible then that in spite of the criticism that you're getting for your report, Paul Quinn Judge, the new report from the International Crisis Group, Afghanistan, the Long Hard Road to the 2014 Transition, which I mentioned in the beginning, that the Karzai government have dismissed disdainfully, and the NATO Secretary General, Rasmussen, he said he did not share in the ICG's negative assessment. Is it possible that your so-called negative assessment is in fact even perhaps positive? Because I've been hearing from some former CIA people who are saying that things could actually get incredibly much worse before 2014 rather than after 2014.
The next few years are going to be really tough. And this is why, though in many ways our conclusions are fairly straightforward, why we are stressing now that it's really a question of time that's running out. The government has to move fast to recover its ground, if it's going to recover its ground at all. It cannot assume that it has a number of years to regroup, rethink, and push forward. This is the point. 2014 is in many ways the decisive point, the watershed for the current Afghan government. After that, I fear, though I hope it's not the case, that some of the darker predictions that you've been citing might start to come true.
Well, there is an indication, is there not, that a lot of the NATO countries are going to pull out before 2014. Unless the Afghan police and army fill that security vacuum, I guess the dire predictions could become more real. I mean, you mentioned earlier these rather well-planned Taliban attacks, and along with the infiltration of the Afghan army, causing the green on blue killings of, I mean, the head of the U.S. Military there, and General Allen, just the other day, said, you know, we're willing to sacrifice a lot for Afghanistan, but we're not really willing to be murdered for it. You can detect, I think, in the U.S. military, a real fatigue, if not disgust.
There's a real sign of fatigue, not only in the U.S. military, but in other Western countries which are participating in the operation. And this, again, should be a wake-up call for the Afghan regime. When this happens, there's always a danger, we've seen it in other wars, that people in the country where the war is taking place, Afghanistan in this case, will perceive the Western departure as a sign that they are giving up on the country. There have been problems in Afghanistan for many years now, and President Karzai has unfortunately not addressed these in any consistent or profound manner. He has to do it now because he just doesn't have too much time left and too many more levers to pull.
Well, just in closing, and then Paul Quinn Judge, I imagine it's fairly likely that there'll be more of these very well planned Taliban attacks. The recent one on the NATO base that destroyed hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Harrier jets and blew up the fueling depot. Today we learn of a suicide bomber killing a group of intelligence officers. It does seem that these are well-planned strikes, and I assume that they will continue, if not get more deadly.
Yeah, the Taliban have studied their history. They know full well that particularly spectacular telegenic strikes can create an enormous amount of political momentum against the war. They're still trying to find the best way of doing this. They tried it in Camp Bastion. I suspect they'll try it again. They're looking for the way to drive, finally, the message home to the West that this war is not worth fighting and that it's time for the West to pull out. They are guerrillas. They may be very local fighters, but there is a very clear strategic force and strategic plan guiding them. And so far, I see no reason why they would ever stop, why they would stop pushing this.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us from Brussels, Paul Quinn Judge. Again, I've been speaking with Paul Quinn Judge, who is the director of the Asia Program for the International Crisis Group, who have just issued a report on Afghanistan, the long, hard road to the 2014 transition. Previously, he was a foreign correspondent for Time magazine, and he has been visiting and covering Afghanistan since 1989. Okay. So you're still there, Paul? So yep. this will be up at ianmasters.com. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producers Michelle Manas and Tariq Mohammed. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments. And the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Bye.